Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso. Happy New Year, everyone. And I am so, so excited to kick off the new year with the amazing Mindy Jensen. Yes, ladies, you heard me right. I have the pleasure of bringing on Mindy Jensen, co-host of the Bigger Pockets Money Show. And she's so amazing. If you don't know her, you definitely have to go check out her content. Not only is she the co-host of the Bigger Pockets Money Show, she is a mom. She does live in her flips with her husband. She's a real estate agent. She's an author. She's so many things. She's a household name, really, in many, many households. So it's so cool to bring her on. I figured it'd be a great way to kick off the new year. And I am so excited for her. She's going to actually share how she's done living flips with kids. And what I'm really most excited to talk about is the Instagram mom and the reality. And even as a supermom, quote unquote supermom, doing it all, there's still the reality. And we have an awesome conversation of getting real and just being a mom and doing all the things. And so I am so excited for you to hear from her. But before we dive into today's episode, we are almost at our 100th episode, which is amazing. It's going to be coming up in a couple weeks. And so I'm going to be answering some of your questions. I've already got some amazing questions in the works. But if you'd like to submit a question and get your question answered on air, definitely you can email me at Jen, J-E-N, at InvestorMama.com. Again, that's Jen, J-E-N, at InvestorMama.com. I'd love to hear from you. Also, if you are looking to kick off the new year, maybe make some extra income or maybe even pivot into a new career, go to investormama.com/makemoney and there's great resources on how you can get educated. Maybe you're looking to help other businesses with Facebook ads. There's the Facebook ad course, or you want to start an Etsy shop. There's the Etsy course, or you want to pivot into a completely new career, but that's more flexible, but also great income. You can take the Salesforce challenge. All these are great. All these courses and resources I have either personally taken or been through or know people who have and have made money out of the gates. So I can highly recommend it. And I am an affiliate with these. So if you do purchase anything, it helps support the show as well. So it's a win-win all around. So definitely, again, you can go to investormama.com/makemoney and check that out. But without further ado, let's dive into today's show. Mindy, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Jen, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. That was very, very nice of you to say, and I hope I can live up to your introduction.
No, it's all so true. I'm so excited to have you on. And I know many people may know you, some may not. So why don't we just start with your money story?
Well, I was born in a very small town in Southern Illinois, and then I moved and 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 I moved. And I have never lived in a house for more than 6 years. And like one house for more than 6 years. And I got used to moving a lot. And when I met my husband, I had just bought a condo and it was a really kind of dirty, gross condo because it was all I could afford. And I had fixed it up. And when I sold it, I bought it for $49,000 and I sold it for $75,000. I'm like, wow, I just paid off every debt I had and I'm marching into my marriage debt free. Through real estate, I want to do that again. So we fixed up his house that he had inherited from his grandparents and we sold it. And that kind of started this journey of live in flipping, which we didn't know was a thing. We were just doing it because we're cheap and we didn't want to pay for a place to live in while also paying for a house that we were renovating. And when I was selling my condo, I was talking to the attorney and he said, you don't have to pay capital gains taxes because you've owned this for 4 years. If you sell it after, if you own it for two of the last 5 years and lived in it for two of the last 5 years, you don't have to pay taxes on the gain up to $250,000 because you're single. Or if you were married, it's up to $500,000. I was like, oh, well, okay. I love not paying taxes when I don't have to. So we made $100,000 on my husband's house because it was way nicer. And we made about $100,000 on the next two or three houses. And we would just roll that into the stock market. And then like pull it out and buy another house and then roll it back into the stock market. And, you know, when we needed money for the down payment, we would put money down on the next house, but all the gains went into the stock market, and we kind of cash flowed the repairs as we went, because my husband was a contractor for the Veterans Administration. He was making good money as a computer programmer, and we didn't spend very much.
That's amazing. So you were okay putting your money in the stock, all your gains in the stock market, even though you were trying to scale up your real estate business? Because I know sometimes people say, if you are saving for a down payment, don't put it in the stock market, because if you lose it, then your down payment's gone.
So that is a really great question. I'm glad you clarified that. Yes, absolutely. Do not put any money that you need in the next 2 to 3 years into the stock market. What I was doing was taking the profits and putting that into the stock market, because that's a long-term investment for us. And the money that we put into the stock market 10 years ago is still in there. The money we put into the stock market 20 years ago is still in there. We're saving for the future. We're not saving for like tomorrow. We're saving for retirement in 30 years, retirement in 20 years. So at the time, I mean, now my husband is retired, but at the time we didn't know that you could retire early. So we were just saving for retirement because we didn't have, how do you say this without sounding awful? We didn't have a need for that extra $100,000. So we put it into the stock market.
Which is great. And then you were saving separately then for the next down payment?
Yeah, well, and that's just the profits on the house. We still had the, you know, you put down your down payment, and then when you sell the house, you've got these big profits, you put those into the stock market, and then you take the down payment that you had, and you just put that onto the next house. And this is, I mean, we're talking 20 years ago when you could buy a house for $200,000, sell it for $300,000, and then go and buy another house for $200,000. We didn't have the unbelievable price gains that we've had recently, where once the 200,000 houses are now 300,000, they're not back down to 200,000. Like there's no more $200,000 houses.
Yeah.
Where we're at, you know?
So I love this strategy. I'd love for you to now share a little bit though, because this was great when you guys are young, you're starting off, then you have kids. How does the strategy change for you once the girls came along?
Well, it should have changed, but it did not change. And if we could go back and do it differently, I think we would have taken longer to rehab some of the houses. I think there's some of the houses we wouldn't have bought at all, including the one that we purchased in 2006. that one I could probably have done without. That had it all. It was on the lake, so it was more expensive than all the rest of the houses near it. It was in a very high property tax area, so it's already more expensive than other houses. And then the taxes are based on the price of the house. So significantly higher property taxes than the places around it. The market crashed while we owned it. It was a bad experience. We made money off of that property, but we were planning on selling it for probably $300,000 more than we ended up selling it for. And we sold it in 2012, and it was just, it's probably now back to where we thought it was going to be in 2000, like 15 years ago.
Wow.
So yeah, it can be rough. I forgot what you asked me. So.
No, because live and flips, it usually involves a lot of renovation, a lot of construction, and it's good when it's just two people, but then when you start adding three, four, and so forth, how do you live under construction?
Yeah, it can be really rough. And top tip is to keep one room, at least one room, untouched. So your bedroom, you have a place where you can retreat and be in a space that isn't under construction, or your bedroom and your children's bedroom, or, you know, everybody, if they're tiny, you could just, everybody sleeps in one bedroom while you're remodeling some of these houses, some of these parts. We did big remodels. We did like whole house remodels, but you don't have to do a whole house remodel to do a live-in flip. You can do a kitchen and paint the walls and do new light fixtures in all the rooms, and the whole house gets a refresh and looks way different without gutting it to the studs. There's all sorts of levels of rehabbing a house. And I don't want people to listen to this and say, oh, well, I could never do that because it's too much work. It doesn't have to be too much work. I mean, have you ever seen a house that had outdated paint and then you come back in and they've painted it? Wow, this looks way better. I mean, new flooring is very easy. That's like a one-day install if you're getting new carpet. And the whole place is transformed from that ugly old green shag carpet to the new updated gray low pile carpeting. And it transforms the space without being a huge project. I would caution people from wanting to jump in with both feet on the very first project, but dip your toes in there. We did that. My first project was paint and tile on the kitchen floors and a couple of new light fixtures. And then the next one was more painted new floors and new like updated appliances, I think. And then the next one, we new kitchen, new bathroom.
you went head first.
New paint, everything. We didn't pop the top. That's a project. If you're thinking about adding a second story, think again. If you want to build your own house from scratch, oh my goodness. Before you do that, watch every episode of Grand Designs. It's a show out of the UK. Every single episode is a disaster. They follow these people around as they're building their house for, well, it was, our timeline is 3 months. And then 2 years later, they're putting the finishing touches on the house. And it can be a lot of work and the rewards can be very big, but it can also cost you a lot of money and it can be very soul crushing throughout the process. So it's not for the faint of heart. If you have children, that's not the time to start it, especially if you have little kids, because little kids will take up 27 hours of every day.
Yeah, I remember my daughter was almost three and we bought a duplex that we were going to house hack and we needed to add another bedroom because I was pregnant with our second at the time. And we just moved in. They started construction like the next day. And I remember by the time we got done with like the move and everything, like there was literally holes in the wall, dust everywhere from where the contractors had started. And I said to my husband, it was like 4:45. We had to pick up our daughter at 5. I'm like, we cannot bring her here. There was literally dust everywhere. And it was in shambles. So I called like every hotel and we live in like suburbia and I'm calling all these random hotels. Like, can we just come now? And we ended up finding something across from her school. We stayed there for a week. She had the best time. She was like 2.5 and she loved it. She thought it was an adventure and we had a pivot, but it honestly, in the long term, this house is amazing. It's doing very well, giving us a lot of rent. But at the time it was like, oh my goodness, what did we do? But even like when it is like that crazy hectic, I still feel like you can make the best out of it and you just make it work anyway, because you're providing for your family's financial future.
You know what? That's a really good point. How flexible are you? And be honest, because this is you we're talking about, and this is your life you're talking about. If you're not a flexible person, if you are very rigid, then live-in flipping is probably not the best choice for you. You do need to be very flexible because stuff is going to go wrong. Spoiler, stuff is going to go wrong in very big ways. You're going to come home thinking that the contractor is done and he's like, hey, I broke a pipe. And now we have $10,000 more in repairs to do. And your living room's wet. And you're like, what? I'm having a dinner party tonight. Yeah. No, you're not. Lots of things that can go wrong.
And the kids throw a whole other wrench in it. Because now, like, as flexible as you think you may be when you have a kid, I feel like it's just like, oh, now you know what flexibility is.
So we had one property where I had a 4-month-old baby and we had a freak storm. It was one of those, they call it a 500-year storm. And they had just ripped the roof off the house and built a second story and put tarps around it and then left for the weekend. I should have not let them do that. They left for the weekend. The winds came, shredded the tarps, and then the rains came. And there was one spot right in the middle of my bed that I could put the baby where she wasn't getting rained on the house. And, you know, thinking back, why didn't we just go to a hotel? Well, because we had to get buckets of water all around the whole house and like dump them. You can't leave your baby in a hotel room and do that. So we found this one spot that wasn't wet and put her there and ran around the house. Like, it was raining in the light fixtures.
Oh my goodness.
I've never seen so much rain in my life.
And I bet you there's so many moms listening here. Like, what? How could you do that?
You do what you have to do to survive. And, you know, I found her a dry spot.
And I'm sure she remembers that, right? And talks about it all the time.
Oh, at 4 months old, sure.
Exactly. But kids are more nimble than we think they are. And they can tolerate a lot. It's just if we can tolerate it.
They really can. Yeah, they can.
So, well, Mindy, I was really excited to bring you on to really take a deep dive into, because you are so successful and you have all these things going on. We just went through, you've done the Live and Flip. You are, like I mentioned, intro, super successful, co-host of the Bigger Pockets Money. You're a household name. You're everywhere. When people think of real estate, they think of you in many regards, which is awesome. And kudos to you for doing all of that. But there's also the reality, though, you're doing all these things. How are you so successful? But then at the same time, like we talked about before we started recording, there's the Instagram mom and there's the reality mom. And I'd love for you to talk more about that.
Oh, you know, first of all, thank you so much. That's very sweet of you to say all of those things. But it can be really hard to come to, you know, be online and see all these perfect people. And a lot of times it doesn't feel real. I'm really confident. And I think a lot of moms, I mean, just because I'm really confident doesn't mean I don't second guess myself all the time. I'm still fighting with my kids in the morning over, you can't wear that. It's too short. And I'm like, no, we're not. I'm tired of having this fight. But it's, you look online on, you know, I don't go on Instagram because everybody there is perfect. And I don't even want to compare myself to all of those people. But even like on Pinterest or Facebook or, you know, I want to be that mom that, you know, does all of the meal prep and the meal planning and everything's perfect. And look, I only spent $1.50 on groceries this month because I'm so great. And then I look at my grocery budget. I'm like, how did I spend $1,200 last month on groceries? I don't even remember what I made. And well, of course you did, because you went to the grocery store 14 times because you ran out of things because you didn't plan ahead. Well, I talk about money all the time. I should be so good with it. And for the most part, I am. But groceries elude me, and, you know, lots of things elude me, and it's, I'm not organized at all. You can only see this very clean background. There's my husband's chair right behind me. He did. But you're supposed to only see this very clean background. You can't see all the crap that's on the table right here for good reason, because that doesn't present a good image. But you know, if you could see it, you'd be like, wow, why is she such a pig? It's hard to be real in America today with these social media posts that show how perfect everybody else is. And, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. Why can't I just enjoy what I have? Well, because somebody's doing it better. So why can't I be better too?
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that and for just being so open and transparent, because we all have this ideal vision of being that Instagram, and that's just not reality. We all know that. We all can't be that. And I know everything's about optimization. And am I a good mom? Am I the good business owner or the good worker or the good wife or the good daughter or the good granddaughter for some, if they're lucky enough, or good, should. And sometimes I even know myself, I want to just shake myself and just say, be present, just stop.
Yeah. And being present can be really hard because there's that ding on your phone and you're like, oh, I just have to see who that is. If it's real important, they'll call or they won't. And that's fine because I'll hear about it tomorrow. Being present is really important because I have, like I said, I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, and the 15-year-old is almost 16, and soon she'll be 18 and going to college. And then she doesn't want to go to the local college, even though it's a really good college. She wants to go away to college. And I get that. But then, you know, then my baby bird will leave the nest. And then my other baby bird will leave the nest. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God, can I kick you out already? Because let's be real. Sometimes you're like, stop fighting with each other. But I know that that'll be sad too. So I want to be present with them now.
Is there anything you do to be present?
Oh, no phones at dinner. Okay. When the phone goes off, You don't get up to get it. It's not at the dinner table. We try to do dinner every night. We are less than successful as they get older. Pizza movie nights on Fridays. We try to stick with that because that's something that we've had in place for years. Make your own pizza night at home is a really great way to bond as a family. You know, let's make dough together. What kind of funny things can you make on your pizza? When they were little, they would make smiley faces with the pepperoni. We would make really weird shaped pizza, being better at it now. But then each person gets whatever they want on their pizza. So your gross mushrooms aren't touching my, actually nobody eats mushrooms in my family. Your gross peppers aren't touching my delicious everything else. So that's fun. And then we'll watch a kid-friendly movie. Although not all kid-friendly movies from your childhood are kid-friendly today.
Yes, which I'm realizing because he's actually not so great sometimes.
I have very sensitive kids. We were watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kid. And there's a scene, spoiler alert, there's a scene where the aunt that has taken them across the backyard gets killed by a scorpion, and my kids are just sitting there bawling, crying their eyes out. You didn't tell me the aunt died. I'm like, I forgot the aunt died. And my husband turns to me, he's like, what's next week? Old Yeller? I'm like, well, might as well.
So great.
So yeah, it's hard, you know, being present with your kids in the car is good when you're, you know, picking them up at school. How was your day? What was the best part about your day? That's my favorite question to ask them when we're coming home from school. And they are always, we carpool on the way home. So I ask all the kids that are in the car and they're always so embarrassed that I would ask the other kids too. I'm like, they're in the car. I'm not just going to focus on my kids. But it's become kind of a ritual now in the car when I, on the days that I do pick them up, they have to tell me what the best part of their day was. And I think that's a good habit to get into, you know, establishing rituals with your kids like that. And then keeping them, but then also making them focus on the good parts of their day.
Yeah, no, that's a great tip. Yeah, because I know now too, I ask my daughter, she's young, she's only 5 and a half, and my son's 2 and a half. And when I ask them, I'll get like maybe 2 words of, you know, he is good. I'm like, well, what'd you learn? I don't know. A little more.
Yeah, when my 12-year-old was a little bit younger, hey, what was the best part of your day? Recess. Lunch. I'm like, really?
you gotta love them. Well, I'd like to go back a little bit and go a little bit deeper into your day because you are, like I said earlier, just so successful with everything. How do you do it all?
Okay. So in the morning, starting at around 2 o'clock in the morning, my body wakes up for no reason whatsoever, even though we're supposed to be asleep. And my brain's like, oh, let's think of everything right now. And my body's like, you know, I'd really rather just sleep. And my brain's like, no, let's think of, remember all the things you were supposed to do yesterday that you didn't get done. Let's run through those and feel guilty about those. And let's make a list of all the things you're going to do today, even though you're really not going to do them all. But let's make a big old list so you can make sure to not cross everything off and feel guilty about that tomorrow at 2 a.m. And that's about an hour and a half. And then my body finally wins and my brain goes back to sleep. And I wake up at 5. And I'm like, oh, I should really go. Like, now I could sleep. Now I could go back to sleep easily. And my body's like, no, now we got to get up. So I get up. I go through my emails because I'm a real estate agent. I have multiple clients who are looking for different properties. So I go through the emails that come through in the morning or overnight to see, you know, what are the new properties that came up for them. I know what they're looking for. I click through and I'm like, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. Oh, this one might. So I'll send them a little note. Hey, I think this one might work for you. Would you like to go see it? And then it's time for my kids to get up. We have a fight about what they're going to wear to school because it's too short or it's too dirty or they wore it yesterday. Or we have a fight about what's for lunch because they want to take chips and cookies and I want them to have healthy food like carrots because I'm so mean. You know, how many fights do you have with your kids in the morning? When they turn 15 and 12, you'll
I get them now at 5. Mommy, I want to wear this. It's too cold outside. You can't wear that, honey. No, but I really want to wear this dress. It's too cold. You're going to freeze.
It's snowing and that's a mini skirt, but you know, you'll figure it out. Yes. I have stopped having that argument. My daughter in high school wants to wear a sweatshirt and it's only 97 outside. I'm like, well, okay. And then, but you know, when it's 4, I'm like, why do you just have a t-shirt on? why is it backwards? But then I drive her to school. I'm like, well, everybody else is just wearing t-shirts too. I guess you'll all freeze together, huddle up for warmth. And then they go off to school. I start my day. I do, you know, put out fires all day long, just like everybody else. And then usually my husband will pick them up from school. We do carpool with other families, which makes it really nice. That's because we don't have bus service in our school. So that kind of stinks. But the carpool works out nicely. And then it's just like, what is the most pressing thing? I try to go through all of the real estate stuff in the morning. In the evenings or on the weekends, I will show houses. I have taken on a partner, a real estate partner, because she has the same mentality that I do towards buying and selling houses. And I think there's a lot of real estate agents out there that just push you to get into any house at all.
Yeah.
And I want you to find a house that you really like. I want you to be comfortable with everything about it. And that's how my partner works. So I'm doing more with taking clients off of my plate and sharing them with her or referring them to her because I know they'll be taken care of. That's one of the problems. I feel like such a snob for saying this, but like, I'm a really great agent. I want to take care of everybody, but I can't. And, you know, accepting that you can't do everything is going to be, I'll let you know when I've learned how to do that. Cause I still really want to do everything. You know, why can't I? The Instagram moms can do it. What's the difference between them and me? But you know, I can't do everything. It's really hard. I still only have 24 hours in the day. Whoever first posted that, oh, we all have the same 24 hours in the day. What's your excuse?
Didn't have kids.
Yeah. I need to breathe for a minute. Like,
yeah.
Being a working mom is hard work because your kids always want to have a conversation with you when you're running out the door and you're like, oh my goodness, my client is not more important than you, but this is like a $500,000 deal that I'm working on with them. And like, there's a deadline. I have to go.
Yeah.
And I feel horrible that I have to go. And I don't really have to go.
Yeah. But
like, I'm committed to this client now. Like, we're halfway through a transaction. I can't just be like, find another agent. You know, being financially independent means I don't have to work anymore if I choose not to. But once I have committed to working with somebody, I need to see it through. And then my kids have a problem that they have to talk to me about. And it's always like, I'm a horrible person for saying, but it's always at like the worst time. You know?
Yeah. No. And I'm afraid my kids are young and now they want to talk. I'm worried when they get older, they're not going to want to talk. And, you know, I tell myself, oh, I'm just working like the excuse of if I just work really hard now, then I won't have to work later. But I also know myself and know I always just kind of need to work too. What's the conversation you have in your head?
Do you feel guilty for leaving? Because you are financially independent. So technically you don't have to work. So when you're ready to go out that door and your daughters really don't want you to, or maybe they want to open up to you a little bit, what goes through your head at that point?
It's a commitment that I have to a client. I am going to meet you at this house to go view this house. I'm walking out the door. You've probably walked out your door. We're on our way to go there. Mm-hmm. I can't say, I'm sorry, my daughter needs to talk to me for 5 minutes. It's different. And it's not like, I know that moms are listening and they're like, I get what you're saying, but you know, you should be there with your daughter. Like if she was bleeding out of her eyeballs, of course I would call up my clients and be like, hey, I'm not coming. We're going to have to reschedule. My kid's bleeding out of her eyeballs. That's an acceptable reason for rescheduling. But hey, my kid needs to talk because some girl flipped her off at school or something. That's not an acceptable reason to cancel a business appointment. I mean, it is a business appointment. So it's a balance. And I don't want to use the word deflect, but kind of reschedule with my daughter. Hey, can we talk about this when I get home? I'll be home in 3 hours. Can you call me? We can talk while I'm driving. We can still, you know, there are things that we can do, but I have this commitment that I need to honor. Here's a fun one. What do you do when your kid gets COVID for the first time the day before you're leaving for a conference? And here's another twist. First, I think I'm doing it right when each kid thinks that I like the other kid better.
Yes, that's what my parents always used to say to me.
That's when you're doing it right. If if one kid thinks that you like the other one better and that kid also thinks that you like them better, you're doing it wrong. But they each think that I like the other one better. The little one got COVID in October. She was 11, the end of September. The under 12 vaccine had not been approved yet, so she was not vaccinated. And she got COVID, and I was going to go to a conference. And she was very scared because this was last year. We hadn't gone through all the 500 different variations of it. She was crying and saying, "Mom, am I going to die?" And what do you say? "Oh, no, you're not going to die. I'm going to go to this conference." I canceled that conference. That was for my company. And I canceled my appearance at that conference because this is my baby. Now we've been through 57 different variations of this stupid virus. My older daughter is 3 times vaccinated and just tested positive for COVID the day before I'm leaving for a conference.
Of course. And I'm like, of course. Why would it be any other way?
So then I put it on her. I'm like, "Do you want me to stay with you? Or do you want me to go to my conference?" And she's like, "I feel so terrible. I'm just going to sleep. Dad's here. You can go to your conference." And she ended up feeling better like the next day or like 2 days later. But it was at that point, what do you do? I know that she's going to be good. She also never gets sick ever. So she's never had the flu and doesn't know what that feels like. And COVID for her was like a really bad flu where your body aches and you have a fever and you're just like, So for her to feel like that, it was like worse because she's never felt that way before. So yeah. What do? You just kind of figure it out. It's a case by case basis. I don't know. I don't really think I answered your question at all. I just told you some stories.
No, but you shared the reality, which is what I was hoping you were going to actually do, because, you know, we're always caught in the Instagram mom and the reality. And like you said, you know, you're ready to go for it was a work conference. You were committed. I'm sure you were probably either getting paid or like they were paying for you something. And your daughter is scared out of her mind. And you had to make a really, really difficult decision. It's not always so easy.
And then it's a good thing that I skipped that first conference, because then I got it and I would have been the super spreader at my own conference.
Yeah. Especially back then when it was in the beginning.
Yeah, that would have been awful. I wasn't vaccinated either because it wasn't opened up to us yet.
So I know your girls are older now, and we just went through how you currently have your work-life balance. But I'd love for you to go back looking on your money journey to financial independence and being frugal and all of that to get to that point. How then did you do it all before you had this freedom lifestyle to choose when you want to work and what you want to do?
So I didn't start working until my youngest was almost in kindergarten. My dream job was announced at the end of April before she was going into kindergarten in August. And I ended up getting it. I started in May. So I really didn't have a lot of balancing work and kids at home. That whole summer, we had a girl who lived across the street. I was working part-time and she would come over and play with the girls while I was working. And that worked out really well. And the girls, it was such a novelty to them to have somebody other than mom to play with that they didn't feel like it was anything awful. They weren't missing out because they loved Maya so much. And then the next summer we put them in summer camp, and the first couple of weeks they loved it. And then they were like, "Oh, I hate this." And I was like, "But I thought you liked summer camp." And they're like, "No, this is awful. They make us walk." And I'm like, "That doesn't sound awful to me. You need to walk." Like, it's like 4 blocks. Like, they're complaining about this. I'm like, you girls need to walk more if you're complaining about 4 blocks. But that was the only summer that they did summer camp. And then I think they were old enough to kind of figure it out for themselves. Then my husband quit. Okay, so then my husband retired from his job. And because we had 1 year of both of us working, and I sat him down and I said, "This is not working out. Both of us working doesn't work. And we have hit our financial independence number and you're still working. And you hate your job, and I love my job, and you make more than me, but we don't need your salary anymore. So one of us has to quit, and it's not going to be me." He finally quit his job, which he hated. And he didn't hate it. It was just very stressful. He was writing software for a blood bank where if you give somebody the wrong unit of blood, they could die. That's bad.
Yeah.
So there was, there's all these little like checks and balances you have to do. And that was actually the reason why we started looking into the FHIR movement in the first place, because he thought he had introduced a bug into the code and he had this super stressful week. And he's Googling, how do I quit my job early? And Mr. Money Mustache pops up. He's like, what is this stuff? This guy is selling something. This is garbage. But he kept reading and he's like, oh, this is a math. This is the math problem and the 4% rule. And he started diving into that. And he said, well, we could quit early. We could, like, we're halfway to financial independence right now. We could quit and, you know, do our own things. And I'm like, great, quit your job. Let's go do something else because you're stressed all the time. What was the question? How do I balance? I don't balance squat. I just juggle all the time.
Well, going back, can you just explain what the 4% rule is?
Oh, okay. So in 1990 something, Bill Bank was, he's a financial planner, and he was wondering, what is the safe withdrawal rate based on past performance of the stock market? If my clients had, you know, this type of portfolio, what is a safe withdrawal rate? They can withdraw this much money from their portfolio every year and never run out of money. And he said, based on a portfolio of 60% stocks and 40% bonds, you can withdraw 4% the first year and then adjust for inflation every year and withdraw basically the same amount every year, and you'll never run out of money over the course of 30 years. And when he ran these numbers, he found that in 96% of the time, you didn't run out of money. In 4% of the time, you did go below your initial balance. Actually, I might be misstating that. It's either your initial balance of retirement or you drop to zero. I think it's initial balance. You don't go below your initial balance in 96% of cases, but in 4% of cases, you go below your initial balance. And I think in one or two cases, you got all the way to zero over the course of 30 years. So 4% is generally assumed to be the safe amount of money that you can withdraw from your retirement funds and still have funds to cover you for approximately 30 years. And then if you look at some of the later research where even bigger nerds than Bill Bengen have done all of this research, in many cases, after 30 years, you have significantly more money than when you started, even though you've been pulling this money out. So 4% is like the worst case scenario. You could actually withdraw probably like 6 or 7%. Yeah, sorry.
No.
And I really nerd out on that one. I love that one.
I know. It's great because I know I've shared it in other episodes, but it's always good for new listeners to really make sure they understand it. And so once you did hit though your financial independence number, I know you said your husband, or at least afterwards your husband walked away. What did it feel like though to actually achieve that goal? Because so many people dream of it, but you guys actually did it.
Well, we hit the goal and we're actually at my sister's house. I think it was the day before my husband turned, I want to say it was the day before he turned 40, but it might've been the day before he turned 45. I can't remember now. And he was like, wow, look at my stocks. Look at our stocks. They hit this number. I'm like, okay. And then that was like kind of it, because he didn't quit his job right away. He continued to work. I got a job. I think this was even before I started working. I got a job and he continued to work for another year after that. So it was kind of anticlimactic.
Okay.
I think there are some people, as soon as they hit that number, they're like, see ya, boss, I'm out. I think there's even more people though that get to that number and they're like, well, maybe just one more year. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, all the research and past performance is not indicative of future gains and your mileage may vary and other disclaimers here, but all the research says, not only is this a really solid research, it's probably even really conservative.
Which is awesome as a goal for moms out there who want to get to that, whatever that point is for them to get that freedom. Yeah. Did the girls understand what you guys had accomplished?
I don't know that we shared it with them. I think they might have been a little too young. They are always surrounded by financial discussions and financial independence conversations I have a podcast. My husband has a podcast. He's had a blog since 2013. We live in Longmont, Colorado, which is this kind of like Phi bubble. We have a lot of people coming through the city just because it's almost like Mecca for Phi people. they go on their pilgrimage to Longmont. And so we have a lot of people that just come through the city. And so they've met all the people in the space. They're like, oh yeah, I know that guy. I know that guy. Like, I went to this guy's house. I slept over at that guy's house. It's no big deal for them to have all this information in their lives, but they're also like super bored with it. Oh, girls, let's talk about your Roth IRA. Oh, mom, I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. All right, Mindy, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on and just opening up about your money story and sharing through a different lens. And I know you've talked a lot about your money story in the past, but I was so hoping, and I think you were so great at really sharing the not so great and just the reality of life and being a mom and doing it all and, you know, live in flips, and everything you guys have accomplished has been just incredible. But I just love that you shared it's not all roses and sunshine, and there's realness, and it's okay to live in the mess. That's kind of how we all do it in a way.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. And I do enjoy talking about this. It's not something I get to talk about all that much, because, you know, it feels like people don't want to hear, but I think that people do need to hear that, you know what, you're doing just fine, even if you're not perfect.
I'd love to pivot into our lightning round. This is where I ask my guests the same four questions each week. Mindy, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Well, question number one is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Okay. So 100,000 years ago in 1999, I hopped on my bicycle with like 100 other people and rode from Seattle, Washington to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
In like 48 days. It wasn't like in a day, in like 48 days. It was a super fun time. It was a fundraiser for the American Lung Association, because when you can't breathe, nothing else matters. And it was an experience. It was so much fun. 48 days of not working and just pedaling across America. It's warm in America, some of those places. It was across like June and July, but I got to see so many cool places about in America.
I was going to ask you, how do you pack for that? And how do you sleep?
You sleep in a tent on the ground. Sleeping is not a problem after you've pedaled 105 miles in one day. And how do you pack for that? 4 pairs of bike shorts, 4 bike jerseys, some sports bras, a couple of outfits for when you're not on the bike. And yeah. You actually don't have to pack very heavily because you're mostly just pedaling.
And then you just stop for laundry, stop to eat, and stop to set up a tent.
Yeah, it was an organized ride. So you had a definite place to stop every night.
Okay.
And it was usually in a city so that there was a place to do laundry eventually.
Okay. So it wasn't like total in the woods figuring out where you're going to sleep. And
Exactly.
Do they still do that? That's so cool.
I haven't seen one. They did one in 98 and they did one in 99 and then they didn't do one for a while. I think they've done a couple of them since, but I'm not sure.
Okay, cool. I'll have to look into that. That sounds awesome. Maybe not something you want to do with kids, but just something to do. Like, yeah, if you're younger.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, question number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
This was a hard question. My oldest daughter is incredibly inspiring because she is so smart. She is so driven. She's 15, so she, you know, has the normal amount of 15-year-old, you know, self-consciousness. But there are other parts of her where she's like, I know that this is right, and I am not going to be deterred in any way. I don't care what other people think about me. One example is she will only drive an electric vehicle because she doesn't want to drive a gas vehicle. She doesn't want to contribute to the carbon emissions or, you know, the greenhouse gas or whatever it is. She's better than me in every way. She doesn't want to do that anymore. She wants, you know, the earth is warming and she's very environmentally conscious. And so she said, I told her, I would like you to learn how to drive a stick shift. And she said, oh, I'm only ever going to drive an electric vehicle. And then she said 2 seconds later, Mom, who's going to pay for my driving lessons? I'm like, well, we don't have an electric vehicle, so it doesn't matter. But she is so dedicated. Like when she locks onto something, she is so dedicated and so driven. And that's just very, very, very inspiring.
I love it. I love it. So you're going to get out of the electric car?
Well, here's the thing. Yes, we are. But it is because it's so helpful to us for her to be able to drive. Like then she can drive her little sister to school and that takes all the commuting off the plate. If that was her own doing, we would just be like, okay, buy it yourself then. But because it's so helpful for us too, we're going to help her out with that.
Oh, okay. Very cool. We started saving. My daughter is like, yeah, I only want a Tesla, mommy. Like, okay. You can start saving. You're 5 and a half now. You have time. You'll be fine. Oh, question number three is, what books are you reading now or have read that you loved and would recommend?
The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Love that book. And I just got, it's tipped by Barbara Sloan, The Life-Changing Guide to Financial Freedom for Waitresses, Bartenders, Strippers, and All Other Service Industry Professionals. It is a book about the people who live off of tips, like waitresses or bartenders or strippers or just people in general who live off of being tipped and how you can still reach financial independence on a tip salary. And I actually have not read the book yet, but I just got it and I am super, super excited about it because I was a waitress for a long time. Because you can make a lot of money as a waitress or a bartender. You can blow a lot of money as a waitress or a bartender. I know that when I was a waitress, I certainly was not doing good things with my money. I was doing rather stupid things with my money. And so were all the ladies I worked with. And it seems like such a no-brainer to current Mindy to be like, oh, as a waitress, you get so much cash every night. If you're in a good place, and I was in a good place, if you're in a good restaurant, you can make, I mean, I knew bartenders that were making $1,000 a night.
Wow.
And that's Friday and Saturday, but $2,000 in a week.
Yeah.
Then you can go and only make $200 or $300 during the week, or just work Friday and Saturday nights as a boost to your regular income. Hit financial independence way earlier. And I mean, you're really working hard for that money, but look at how much money you could make in this easy industry. It's easy. I should not say easy. It is not easy. It is hard, hard work, but it is like when you leave for the night, you're done. You're not thinking about all the things you have to do tomorrow. You're just going to do the same thing. And it's not, you know, there's no report you have to write or,
yeah,
you know.
You and there's no educational level requirement or credential or anything like that that you would need.
Not really. You're just delivering stuff to people who consume it and then leave you money for it.
Yeah, which is really cool. And I was actually able to get Barbara on for last week's episode. So if you would love to check out her story and everything, she is so, so amazing. You can go check out episode number 95, Overcoming Obstacles and Reaching Financial Independence, Working in the Service Industry with Barbara Sloan from Tip Finance. She's just so, so amazing. So definitely go check it out. And the last question is, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you can tell our moms out there to help them on their own financial independence journey?
Know what you want. Write down what your goals are, your specific goals. And it doesn't necessarily have to be you plural. It can be you singular. But I think that being on the same page with your partner is so valid. But know what you want. As a mom, know what you want as a for your financial situation and then work backwards. I want to be financially independent by 40. Okay, well, if you're 39 and in $50,000 worth of debt, that may not be the most realistic goal, but move it 10 years. I want to be financially independent by 50. Okay, what does that look like? Well, first you have to pay off your debt. You have to start investing. You have to like figure out where you want to be and work backwards and start working on a plan to get there. But know what it is that you want. Know what you want as a mom and then work backwards to get there. I want to have a date with my kids every month. okay, great. That's going to be real easy. Doesn't have to be super expensive, but make plans to do that every month. Put it on the calendar. Bam, you're done. You've already accomplished your goal.
I love that. That's so good.
But goals are, I actually really like that goal. I want to have a date with my kids. So I'm going to put that in my calendar because it seems like if things don't get into my calendar, they don't get done.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, before my daughter started kindergarten, it came to me kind of at the last moment, like I should really have a date with her to make it like a special night before thing. And so I quickly told my husband that morning, I need to go out to dinner. like we're going to just do like this quick special thing. And he's like, you couldn't think about like, yes. I was like, nope, just came to me. We're going to do it today. like mommy daughter date. so yeah, he's like, fine.
if it doesn't get into the calendar, it just, you know, you get to the end of the day and you're like, oh, I meant to do 17 things that I forgot about.
Yeah. you know, I live and like my calendar is everything for better or worse.
yeah, usually worse, but
yeah, that's true too.
It helps keep me on track.
All right, well, Mindy, well, thank you so much for coming on today's episode. I had such a great time talking with you. It was so good. How can my listeners connect with you further?
I am on Twitter at Mrs. 1500 MRS1500. You can email me, Mindy at biggerpockets.com. I'm on Facebook. Mindy at BP is my account, I guess, handle. And I'm on Instagram, but I never use it because I don't want to look at all the perfect people.
yeah, it's funny because I'm not such an Instagram lover. I was actually talking to my friend about this earlier. And but I feel like in order to grow the podcast, I kind of need to be on Instagram. So it's a very love-hate relationship I have with it right now.
yeah, I've just decided if I'm not going to use it to grow my show because I don't want to look at everybody's so perfect on there.
Yeah. Well, they have the lighting and the video camera angles and it's, you know.
Yeah. There's no room for my imperfect lighting on Instagram. So I just won't do it. but I'm on Twitter all the time.
Awesome. Well, Mindy, thank you again.
Jen, thanks for having me. This was so much fun.
All righty, that wraps up another amazing episode of the Investor Mama podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you really, I mean, Mindy was just so awesome. And I know I appreciate just so much how open and transparent she was and some of the struggles she even deals with, like just talking about her own life and, you know, the Instagram mom versus the reality mom. And it's cool because you see her on the Bigger Pockets Money Show as the co-host. And she's got all these amazing, amazing things. And I just loved and appreciated that she was so real. So hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy today's episode, along with my other content, please subscribe on the platform that you are listening to and leave a rating and written review. It lets the providers know you are finding value with my content. And also feel free to share on social media. I'd love to get more listeners to the Investor Mama podcast and every little bit helps. So thank you so much. And feel free to let me know what you think of the Investor Mama podcast. Don't hesitate to reach out. Let me know if there's any guests you'd like, or if you'd like to come on the show, you can email me at jen@investormama.com. Again, that's jen@investormama.com. This is Investor Mama. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.